BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello everyone and welcome to another BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG and also work clinically as a nurse consultant. So today I have great excitement in recording this podcast with a focus on the Global Register of Alopecia Areata, Severity and Treatment Safety, which is looking at long-term and real-world data. So this is a new register for everyone to learn about today and get involved. So today I have an expert panel. I have Anne, who is a research nurse in Manchester. I have, I'm sure many of you know, Matthew Harris, a consultant dermatologist in Manchester. And I have Nekma as well, a consultant dermatologist in Liverpool, who are very, very much involved in this project. So welcome everybody to today's podcast and thank you for joining.
Thanks, Tina.
Hi, Tina.
Wonderful. So the way we're going to work this podcast is I'm just going to direct the questions because there's three of us here. So first of all, just for our listeners, Matt, would you mind just introducing sort of the background and how you became involved in this register, which is also known as GRASS UK, and sort of your role and involvement in it as well?
All right. Thanks, Tina. So I'm a consultant dermatologist in Manchester, and I also work for the University of Manchester as a senior clinical lecturer. And I've been interested in hair disorders since doing my PhD when I was a registrar in dermatology, and I've been running a specialist clinic in Manchester since 2011. And I suppose we got involved in the register by seeing the sort of really interesting change in the treatment landscape for alopecia areata, which has been developing over the last few years, driven by industry involvement and pharmaceutical involvement in developing new treatment targets. But from that, we recognise that, you know, the clinical trial data isn't the only thing which can guide us on how we manage patients. And if you look at other examples in other specialties like Bad Beer Register for psoriasis, it has really informed us how we can manage our patients in the longer term and give our patients really clear guidance about treatments and success and also risk involved. So yeah, that's how I got involved.
That's wonderful. And it is, it's a great point mentioning, you know, the value we obtain from the registers like Bad Beer, like A-Star, and I know there's another one coming out for HS as well. So this is really exciting that there's now one for alopecia as well. And I feel as a clinician, it's, you know, it's so important because a lot of us now will be involved in the hair clinics and, you know, we're looking at new treatments. The development of new treatments is great. I mean, it's very exciting. So this is such a valuable project. So going back to Nikki, just explain your background and how you became involved in GRASS UK and what's your role in this project.
Hello, Tina. Thank you for having me. So my name is Nikki May. I'm a consultant dermatologist from Liverpool. My involvement dates back to when I was in Australia in 2019. I was involved in a global consensus project looking at defining the core domains for what an alopecia areata registry would look like. Our paper was subsequently published in JAMA Dermatology. And then when I returned from Australia to the UK, Matt and I got together to work on developing something nationally here in the UK, which we then coined GRASS UK, and that was back in 2020. So that's my involvement in GRASS UK.
Fantastic. And wow, what backgrounds you have with Matt doing his PhD and then obviously the excitement as well of coming from Australia. So, you know, I can already understand the compassion behind this project and having spoken to you before as well, you're a great team and are really driven on this project as well. So very exciting. And Anne, welcome as well to the podcast. And same question to yourself. How did you become involved in GRASS UK and what's your role in the project as well?
Thank you, Tina, for having me. So my background is nursing. I was trained in general nursing, and I've worked in clinical nursing and also research nursing. And I'm employed by the University of Manchester. So I've worked on rheumatoid arthritis register in the past as pharmacovigilance advisor. So that register works in collaboration with Buddy Bear. So when this role arose, I thought I was suitable for this role. So I did apply and I got this role. And in the GRASS register, I help with recruitment, contacting sites, and collecting data, really.
Fantastic, Anne, and congratulations on getting the job as well. It's definitely worthwhile. And, you know, by our listeners listening to this podcast today, it'll definitely spark some interest in being involved in this project. And obviously, we're going to do a deep dive, Anne, into how you recruit, etc. as well later on in this podcast, and know exactly what, you know, in the real world, in our clinician world, how we can recruit. So, Matt, it is a big topic at the moment, alopecia and hair loss, and I know there's lots of work going on behind the scenes. You know, a lot more clinicians, consultants and nurses are becoming involved in alopecia that in hair clinics that may have not been involved with hair before, because of the new treatments and because of the scope of, you know, patients being seen, we do need to set up these hair clinics as well. So can you just, I know you've mentioned what GRASS stands for, but how will this benefit our patients in the future? How do you, you know, going forward, how do you see the benefits of this register, and, you know, what will us as clinicians be able to achieve from this as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think the real benefit of a disease register like this, collecting real world data, is that it actually reflects what we're doing day to day in the clinic. And, you know, if you look at clinical trials and how they're designed, they're very homogenized. You know, they exclude patients who have comorbidities, they have quite limited follow up timeframes, they're powered to identify efficacy of the treatment, but not really the safety concerns of a treatment. And we know from other studies that the patients who are excluded are the ones who are more likely to get the side effects, and they're the ones who really need the guidance for about how we can manage in the longer term. Also, as clinicians, we never do things by the book. We always chop and change, and we add things, and we add multiple drugs to treatments. So it really just gives us a real world reflection. So the register is collecting real world data. It's aligned with the clinic appointments, and it's a prospective collection. So we've got, you know, quite a defined sort of data set, and maybe we can talk about that a bit later on. And we collect patients' data over a five-year period. We have sort of modelled this on Bad Bear and some of the other big registers in the UK. And actually, one of the reasons GRASS UK is based in Manchester is we have the sort of the pedigree, I suppose, of registers here in Manchester, with the rheumatoid arthritis register and Bad Bear. And that's really helped us actually get to this point. You know, with their advice, I think we would be 2 or 3 years behind, you know, if we hadn't had their input. So I think the benefit to the patients is we actually get real world data. It can inform us about treatment, it can inform us about safety longer term. And if you look at the outputs from things like Bad Bear, it's really informed guidelines, it's informed clinical practice, it's given us ideas about risk, like cancer risk with biologic treatments compared with standard treatments. And we hope that GRASS will be able to offer the same sort of insights. It just takes time to get those data.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, refreshing there, you mentioned 5 years, you know, that patients will be seen. And you also mentioned there, just a quick question back at you, Matt, about, you know, patients aligning, you know, the projects aligned with the actual clinician visits. Is that 6 monthly, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously try to make this as doable as possible for the everyday dermatologist. And we would like everybody, if they can, to get involved, just like they can with Bad Bear and A-Star. So the main time points are six monthly for the first 3 years, and then yearly for the next 2 years. There is scope to carry on collecting beyond the 5 years, but it's the 5 year time frame is what we're looking at.
Brilliant. That is refreshing, definitely. And, you know, like you say, you've got the pedigree there with the Manchester Registers. And you know, I'm very fortunate to be on the exec panel for Bad Beer, and I know the work that goes on behind the scenes with Bad Beer. So it's fantastic as nurses in the nursing profession to be involved in these projects as well, which we will touch on later on in this podcast as well. Just going back to the basics as well about the register. Nikki, could you just talk about the assessments and the scores that you're recording, and if people will be, you know, clinicians will be familiar with the assessments that are actually done within this register as well?
Yes, of course. So we're interested in capturing several assessment scores, particularly on efficacy and how well the patient is doing from treatment. So we use the SALT score, and the SALT score is the severity score for alopecia areata, and a SALT score of 100% corresponds to complete hair loss, whereas a SALT score of 0 corresponds to no hair loss, and that's just a measure of scalp hair. So we do that in clinic, but all in addition to that, we also ask our patients to comment on how they are feeling psychologically, and their psychological questionnaires that we ask them to complete, and these are things like the DLQI. And we ask them to complete the ASIS. These are alopecia areata questionnaires, and the EQ5D. They come as a pack, so hopefully they're not too onerous for the patients to complete. In our register, we are recruiting children as well. So for children, for very young children, understandably, the parents or the guardians will complete the questionnaire for them. But for children above the age of 12, they can complete it themselves. We do have tools or assessments for eyebrow and eyelash involvement or response, and that's separate to the SALT scoring that we do.
Fantastic. And going back to the SALT scoring, for those listening today that don't really, you know, I've never done a SALT score before or don't really understand what a SALT score is, could you just explain that? And also, is there opportunities for nurses to be educated, and consultants as well, educated in performing the SALT score?
Yeah, so the SALT score is the severity of alopecia tool. SALT stands for a severity of alopecia tool. And a SALT of 100%, so the scalp is divided into four. So a SALT of 100% equals complete hair loss. So there's no hair on the scalp. And a SALT of 0 corresponds to no hair loss. But it's important to measure. It measures scalp hair loss. So if they've got eyebrow involvement or eyelash involvement, the SALT score will not capture that. And I think the more you do, the easier it becomes. And it's important to practice. And we do have the SALT questionnaires on the BAD website, for example. We're hoping as GRASS develops that we'll have video training for some of our clinicians to be able to do the assessments, and hopefully you'll be able to access that when we have that sort of built into our website. But the more you do, the easier it does become, and it's important to capture, not just for GRASS, but certainly for any NICE approved medications for alopecia areata.
Fantastic, and it would be a valuable resource definitely to have, you know, for people to learn this assessment. And I know as a clinical team, it's something that many of us hadn't done before we started the hair clinics, back with our consultant that specialises in hair. And, you know, we as a team, we kind of now do the SALT score together and buddy up, you know, so it's worth having that sort of grounding, isn't it? And going back to basics it's essential. So, you know, it's great to have some tools and some new learning as well. And for that, quick question, Nikki, is the assessments you mentioned there, there's some patient led, is it online or is it all paperwork?
Yes, at the moment we are printing out the paperwork for the patients. They come in a pack, they're all together. And what we found is that once patients start doing those questionnaires, they get quite used to it. The quicker they become at completing the questionnaire. And I think it's very important to monitor that score as time goes on. Sometimes you see patients who have got complete regrowth, but still their psychological score is sort of high, and you wonder why that is. And then when you explore that, that, you know, that might be an indication or prompt for clinical psychology, for example. So it's very useful to monitor this, not, you know, just long term for patients with alopecia areata on their journey. So it comes as time. We're hoping that we'll have it, you know, sort of electronic based, you know, going forward, but that would be at a later stage.
Yeah, it took a while for Bad Beer to get there.
That's
so
right.
Definitely, it wasn't just a quick one that happened. So yeah, it does. And sometimes, you know, patients actually prefer sort of the paper sort of thing, and yes, we still have issues even with Bad Beer, you know, with patients actually accessing the portal. So it's good to have all areas covered, really, definitely. So the importance of recruitment, and as research nurses, as, you know, people involved in recruitment, it's obviously very important to understand how we recruit. And could you just maybe just explain the inclusion or exclusion, if there is exclusion as well, when you are recruiting?
Yeah, so I will just focus mainly on the inclusion criteria, really. So we recruit patients who have got a diagnosis of alopecia areata, moderate to severe, as how Neki has explained on the source, based on the source score. We also recruit children who are from 0 to 16 years. And we also recruit adults from 16 years with no upper age limit. So anyone who's got the diagnosis of alopecia. We also recruiting patients who are treated with small molecules therapy. And this, for example, includes ritlecitinib, baricitinib, and all other JAK inhibitors. We are also recruiting patients who are treated with the standard treatments or conventional treatments, which include, for example, methotrexate, minoxidil, DPC, so any of those treatments, just to mention a few, will be included in our recruitment eligibility.
Fantastic. And when you're recruiting, Anne, do you work from... I'm going to ask you two questions here. Do you work from specific HER clinics, and is the consultant involved or the nurse involved, say, and this patient's going to be suitable, or do you sort of deep dive into the clinics to find patients suitable? How does it work?
Okay, so I'll just explain out through my recruitment process, really. Recruitment is done, for me, it's at the Salford Royal Hospital, from the hair clinic outpatients, which Matt Harris and other consultant runs. So it's every Thursday. So like prior to the clinic date, I'll go through the screening of the clinic list and go through which patients might be eligible, identify potential patients that I can talk to on the day. But we do have new patients who come to the clinic. So sometimes they are not on treatment, and they've never been on the outpatient clinic before. So I'll wait for the consultant to see them first. And I'll just mention to the consultant that I'm interested in this patient. When you've seen them, would you let me know whether they are eligible to be recruited? So yeah, for your other question, the consultants helps they've got some input in the decisions on recruitment as well. So if they say this patient is eligible, I will go and speak to the patient, explain, summarize about what the GRASS UK is all about, and give them a participant information sheet for them just to read through. And if they are interested in taking part, we'll go through the informed consent form and sign the consent, and then I'll give them the forms which Neki was talking about, which is the patient baseline questionnaire, which involves the prompts, questions that the patient can fill in. And then we also got a clinical baseline questionnaire that we collect information on the comorbidities, any alopecia treatment the patient has been on the past, and any like new treatments the patient might be coming on. And I'll make sure that I'll give a copy of the consent form to the patient before they leave the department, and they can take the participant information sheet as well. And so for the patients, let's say I'm going through my screening list, and if I identify a patient who is already on treatment, for example, if they are on ritlecitinib, I can go and approach them before they go into clinic, because the forms take a little bit of time to complete. So I can approach them before they go into clinic, because I know already they are on treatment and they are eligible. So that sort of helps to shorten the length of the patient visit to the clinic.
Fantastic. And you sound very thorough in what you do. And I'm sure a lot of departments are very jealous not having a nurse like yourself, because you are like gold, definitely. Can I ask a quick question when it comes to the patients? And do you feel that they're really grateful is the wrong word? Do you feel that they really benefit from the fact that somebody's really taken an interest and taken this, having this register? Does that make them feel supported more?
Yes, I think so, because there've never been anything like this in the for alopecia areata, and with the new treatments that are coming on, the patients I think will feel a bit more secure that there's someone who's going to look at the safety of the treatments and how effective the treatments are. So I find most patients are really keen to take part in the register, really.
Yeah, I can understand that, because, you know, having worked with Bad Beer and A-Star, people are really great, you know, again, grateful is the wrong word, really pleased that, you know, clinicians are taking an interest in, you know, the skin or the effect it has on them psychologically. And I know how much the patients, you know, really love actually seeing the research team, and, you know, they have that extra sort of time with them on top of the healthcare professionals' clinician time as well. And it does feel like it's a win-win, doesn't it, really, for the patient and for us healthcare professionals to learn more about real world as well. So it's really, really positive. I do have to ask some negatives though, Anne, going back to yourself. How do you feel it's a lot of work involved, or are there any specific challenges? Because I know within the NHS now we're under so much pressure to see patient after patient and get these waiting lists down. So in the real world, Anne, how do you find the challenges? There must be some challenges.
Yes. The forms, like when you are registered for the registration or recruitment, they're quite thick, so they take a bit of time to complete. And if the patients, so for the recruitment, these patients are coming for their normal clinic visit, and then on top of that, we have to add the time of research. So some of them are in a hurry to go back to work or to do other things, to go to other appointments. So we have to take into consideration that. And it's quite a challenge. But most of the patients are quite willing, really, to take part in research. And so to help sort of alleviate their anxiousness, or I will sit with them. And then while they are completing the clinical and the patient questionnaire form, I can help them completing the clinical baseline forms so we can do it together so they don't feel like it's a burden on them. So I think I find that a bit helpful. But sometimes it means you might miss some of the patients who are eligible because we are sitting with one person to try and complete forms with them, which is okay. But I think just reassuring them that you are there for them helps them to feel comfortable completing the forms, even though they are a bit longer than expected. But having said that, the follow-up forms are not as bad. So when we come to our monthly follow-ups, the forms are a bit shorter, and the patients will, as Neki mentioned before, they will be sort of familiar on how the forms are, and they can complete them much more quicker than on the first.
It's always the first visit, isn't it, Anne? That's always the long one. And then after that, it definitely, well, as a healthcare professional as well, we get slicker. We definitely do. So yeah, that's really, really helpful for our listeners today, because I'm sure there'll be a keen interest in this as well. Just a quick question, Anne, before I get to more questions with the team. Were you confident in hair or alopecia before? Did you have a background in this speciality?
No. So not really. But when I started working on this team, they are quite supportive. So I learned a lot, especially working with Dr. Matt Harris in the clinics. I learned a lot. And I've got a colleague who has lots of experience working on hair. So she did really help me to understand alopecia areata, and just meeting the patients as well and having time to talk to them, I really started understanding the impact of hair loss and how much I would like to be involved to make a difference, really. Yeah, so yeah, just being in the team really helped me to get some experience and some understanding on hair loss.
That's fantastic. Thanks for being so open and honest there. And yes, you definitely are making a difference. And it's really actually, I'm really grateful you've said that, you know, the words you've mentioned there, because the fact is that a lot of, I would say, research nurses and even dermatology nurses haven't really got a massive background in, you know, hair and hair clinics and hair assessments. So it's really reassuring for our listeners today that, you know, you can become involved in this project, despite maybe not even having experience at all in her. Like you say, you learn so much from the patients, you know, the psychological impact. And I'm sure we will talk about this, but, you know, Alopecia UK, they're out there. People know about Alopecia UK and, you know, the amazing work that they, you know, do and the support that they provide as well. So thanks, Anne, for being so honest with that one. And, you know, many of us working in a hospital don't have specific massive research teams. So, you know, quite often we maybe have a research nurse or two or three research nurses that are attached to us in dermatology, but also have, you know, other experience in other research aspects as well. So it's fantastic to know that, you know, research nurses can be involved even without the specific backgrounds. That's really, really helpful. I'm going to ask another quick questions. I'm going to go to Neki just now. And we've mentioned about your involvement in the assessments in the register. And can I ask a couple of quick questions? Is this like a pilot study at the moment, or is this something that people can reach out, our listeners can reach out to be involved in? Could you just talk us through that at the moment, how centres possibly could be involved in the future or even now?
Of course. So at the moment, we've just completed our pilot phase of 50 patients. And it was really important to do that with small numbers, really to get an idea of how long these assessments are going to take, whether we need to revise that and sort of have feedback from our pilot phase. But the plan has always been that it's going to be a long-term project and a long-term register. So absolutely, there is you know, plans for phase one, or phase one involves, we've engaged 18 centres nationally, and these are centres with sort of hair clinics or designated hair clinics, where there's capacity to recruit patients to GRAS. And that's important for phase one, because you need to have the setup to recruit these patients safely without being, you know, too onerous for the patients, too onerous for the clinical team. So our phase one sites, our phase one aim is to recruit more patients in designated hair clinics. And as I've said, we've got 18 sites who are engaged with us for that. And beyond that, beyond phase one and phase two, we're hoping to obviously scale up to allow patients to be recruited from any site, so that, you know, wherever you are in the UK, you can, you know, you can recruit to GRAS. So that is the long-term aim going forward. But that needs to be supported carefully with funding, workforce, and the right infrastructure for that. So I think it's only sensible to scale up as we've done in terms of pilot and then recruitment with hair clinics for phase one.
Fantastic, and congratulations on 18 sites. I mean, that's a good achievement, definitely. And a quick question back at you, Nika, as well. You know, I'm sure there's people out there, listeners today, that really want to be involved. And can they, A, reach out? And also another quick question, can nurses be principal investigators in this project, or does it have to be a consultant dermatologist?
Yes, of course. So patients reaching out, what we often tell patients is they may or may not know if their sites are recruiting for phase one. So it's important to speak to their dermatologist. And the dermatologist might say, if we already are, you know, sort of interested in GRAS and we are sort of penciled in for phase one. And if they're not, then again, to speak to their dermatologist and to email our GRAS email, which is picked up by Anne and the team. And what we then do is keep interested sites for our sort of scale up going forward. And then your second question regarding principal investigators. I think at the moment, what we say is if they've got their GCP, they need to be able to consent the patients. So that's important. And you need to be able to do the assessments. So if that's within your scope, then it should be okay to do.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think the registers do provide a really great opportunity for nurses to be involved at a level of principal investigator, because we do know, you know, nurses really can't be principal investigators for the big commercial studies. So it does really give nurses that opportunity and work within the four pillars that we are, you know, aligned to work in. So yeah, absolutely. And just quickly, is there a link or something we can attach to this podcast just for people to get in touch with yourselves? Matt, I'll direct you that question to yourself.
Yeah, there is. Well, we actually have a small site on the BAD website, and we also have an email address. And we're in the process of trying to build a site in the University of Manchester as well. So that's part of our development phase of the project. So yeah, people can get in contact, express interest, and hopefully we can then expand to those sites. I wanted to make a comment about some of the discussion earlier as well, if that's okay, Tina. I mean, we're talking about the benefit to our clinical practice and the benefit to the patients, but it also benefits the centres we work in. You know, there is a lot of data suggests centres which are involved in research have better patient outcomes, and, you know, and it sort of gets you more comfortable with doing these things at an earlier stage. And I think back to when I was a trainee, you know, we never used easy scores, and now we're doing easy scores every day. So I think, you know, there is a natural apprehension about doing these things and doing these assessments, but actually as you get used to it, it just becomes part of your day-to-day practice.
A really, really valuable point, Matt. You know, going back, and you know, I remember, you know, as very first doing the sort of easy scores when, you know, the biologics were coming through, and everyone, you know, including consultant dermatologists, like, oh, we've not really done these at all. So, and now we do it without thinking. So, yeah, it's absolutely progression, and yeah, the SALT score will become that score that everyone is very familiar with. And we do know, you know, working in education, working as a nurse consultant, you know, we do get asked a lot, you know, how to do these new assessments, and you know, can you provide teaching on them? So, yeah, it's a natural progression, isn't it? And it's a very positive one indeed. So just for our listeners today, we will be putting any links into our BDNG journal, and also into our podcast as well, just if anyone does want to reach out. And obviously they can always reach out to myself at the BDNG team as well. The great news is we are going to be interviewing this panel for our journal as well, so we will have some more information for you, and we will put any valuable links into that journal article as well. So we are coming to the end of this podcast. I just want to go around the team here just to obviously express my thanks for this, such a great informative podcast. But also, before we leave, Matt, have you got any key points you want to say to our listeners today?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose my comments are that we, you know, for us to progress as a specialty, we need to be involved in research to progress our clinical care for our patients. And I think UK dermatology have already shown that we can contribute to these large scale projects with really meaningful outcomes, informing guidelines, informing clinical care. So I would just encourage anybody who's interested to get in contact. We can't expand straight away. It's a process, and it's a longer term strategy. The project is on the NIHR portfolio, so there is, you know, an incentive for your department to be involved. And I think it makes us better clinicians when we get involved in research. So they're my comments.
Very true, it does, mate. And the evidence is there, like you say, Matt, you know, when a team becomes involved in research, and it benefits everybody and the department, and it raises the profile, doesn't it, definitely, of the department as well. And if you're building a department, again, research is so important to have in that department, because it really does raise profile. It encourages people to come and work for you. It's got so many benefits. So fantastic, Matt. And thank you very much for your involvement with this podcast. And I'm just going to come to you briefly. Is there any key aspects you would like to say to our listeners today?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for this opportunity. And to anyone who will be coming to the BAD conference this year in Manchester, who will be exhibiting a stand for GRASS, so they can come to us and ask any questions or express their interest, and we can take their details. I think I've got also an opportunity to present at the BDNG this year when the dates are finalized, so I can sort of give you a bit more information on how we are getting on at that point.
We're so grateful, Anna. We really are excited about you presenting at our main conference in Harrogate this year, and I'm sure we will be able to promote the register as well, and anyone that wants to be, you know, involved at that time, again, there's another opportunity for you at main conference to approach Anne or myself, or I'm sure the team that are there as well promoting. So thank you, Anne, and we are very grateful. Nigma, just before we go as well, any key points you would like to raise before we end this podcast?
Thank you, Tina, for having me today. I think it's just such an exciting opportunity for patients, for clinicians, for nurses, for everyone who's got a family or who knows someone with alopecia areata. GRASS UK is going to provide so important information for all of us. We need to be able to tell our patients what it means to commit to treatment long term. They need to be able to know that information. And I think GRASS UK is the only way we'll find that.
Wonderful. Great words to end this podcast on. And we will be delving a wee bit more into this project in our journal article. I still have lots of questions to ask. So we are very grateful for all of you today for recording this podcast for us. And as I say to our listeners today, thank you for listening. And also, if you do need any more information, please reach out. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.